11. My bullet makes no distinction. 30 minutes after Charles and Moira part. Finding Eric is easy enough. He's right where Charles expected to find him, after all. Waiting in Charles's apartment, sitting in Charles's favourite armchair, relentlessly watching when Charles steps through the door. Charles looks at the long lines of him, the sleek and solid way he breathes, and for a moment he lets himself hate everything that is Eric Lyncher, and the way he happens to be everything Charles has ever wanted. And a few more things besides. It doesn't last, of course, because his endlessly frayed nerves are still sharp and ready every time the other man is in the room. He doesn't bother with greetings or pleasantries, or even anything a bit less jagged and sharp. Charles looks away and tosses his keys onto their usual place in the kitchen. "Did you try to kill Emma?" "Do you think I did?" Eric asks, watching and watching. He crawls under Charles's skin whether or not he's welcome. Always has, and probably always will. Endlessly unsettled or not, Charles is well aware that despite Eric's many efforts, he can't break Charles. "I think you should answer my question," Charles states, pouring himself a glass of water instead of answering, predominantly because he doesn't have an answer. His heart and body feel like he's been betrayed and clawed apart and wants to curl up and lash out at the cause. But his mind thinks it wasn't Eric. And Charles has always had a terrible time deciding between whether to think with his instincts or his head. "Fine," Eric says. "It won't make turning me in any easier." Charles lets himself look back at the killer then, and hopes Eric hasn't noticed that there's the other gaping difference in his routine, in that Charles isn't locking his gun in the safe that serves as his nightstand. He turns back to the sink, putting the now empty glass under the faucet again. "I'm not turning you in, Eric. I'd be sure to have backup for that." "Of course you would," Eric says, and Charles wonders if there's a hint of a smile on his lips. "And no, while the thought has crossed my mind, I would never try to kill your partner." "But you might try to kill Emma," Charles states, and sits down at the kitchen table, facing the murderer. "That surprises you." Eric seems amused. "Charles, I constantly think about killing her, but she's done nothing to deserve it." Charles shrugs. He supposes that might be his way of showing affection. He's not going to presume to understand the mind of a serial killer, not tonight at least. "And I assume you've heard about Raven," he says. Eric frowns, hands tense on the arms of the chair. "No," Eric says. "Is she hurt?" "According to rumour, no. And don't feel bad about not knowing, Eric. We've been keeping it quiet," Charles says, and sighs. "But someone has my baby sister, and I have a way to get her back, I think. But I'd have to do something morally questionable." "You're being blackmailed," Eric infers, and nods. "I'll help." "Of course you will," Charles says wryly, hurting. He stands up and grabs the glass again, but he moves to the liquor shelf instead of the tap, because sobriety is overrated anyway, and he's just as good a shot with 3 drinks in his bloodstream. He finds himself laughing, of all things. "You know, I still have no idea why you're so obsessed with me. I understand my side of this twisted thing of ours, but yours, I don't. It's obviously not just sex, because you're attractive enough for that to be simple enough for you, and it's not just danger, since you get that from murdering people, and we both know I'm nowhere near capable of physically overpowering you." "Just tell me how I can help, Charles," Eric says. He's irritable, in the same way he always gets when it comes to Charles's love of motives, be it killing or deciding to cross the street a different way than usual. Charles shakes his head, and vaguely thinks choosing vodka wasn't a good idea, but it was the closest bottle. "We? Eric? This you and me thing? This isn't logical or reasonable or understandable. But I do understand necessity is the problem. And I need my sister, Eric. He puts the glass down in favor of running a hand down his face, as if he can scrub the worry away. I love her more than you. He thinks about apologizing for that, but no. No, he's not apologizing for the fact he loves his little sister more than he values their twisted, addictive friendship and sex, and all the horrible games he and Eric seem to play. Charles still can't bring himself to look at him, though. He's always tried to be honest, in all things. He won't do Eric the disservice of a lie, not now. Of course you do. She's your sister, Eric says. And Charles has to look then, because he doesn't sound the least bit hurt, or even disappointed. He almost looks sated. You grew up together. You fought to survive together. And you've been protecting her since she was born. And that's why I'm at your full disposal to help get your sister back, no matter what the blackmailers are asking for. He's painfully trusting, Charles thinks, and drinks his vodka like a shot, slamming it back and going back to his glass for water, sobriety, reason. It's as if Eric's forgotten that his promise to never hurt Charles has never been returned. Then I'd very much appreciate it if you'd steal us an inconspicuous car and meet me in front of the coffee shop at the corner, he says. His hands are shaking, but every other part of him is smooth and still. I'll need caffeine for this, I think. For once, Eric lets Charles hear him coming, feet slow and audible as he moves to stop right behind Charles, one hand moving to wrap around Charles's fist. This will turn out fine, Charles, I promise, he says, calm and certain, and ripping Charles apart. No, it won't, Charles says, because this is what Eric does to him. He somehow breaks through Charles's carefully controlled barrier between mouth and mind without even trying. No, it won't! Emma is dying, and Raven is missing, and you... And I'm right here, Eric states, and presses a cautious kiss to the back of Charles's neck. It's a familiar gesture, one that slices Charles to the bone. He squeezes Charles's hand once, and then draws back. Go get your coffee. I'll meet you there. Eric is back to his ghost-stepping ways, it seems, because the next sound Charles hears is his front door and Eric's key locking it, just in case. Charles realizes, numbly, that Eric trusts him so much that he's practically capturing himself. All Charles has to do is ask. The car is so nondescript that Charles nearly trips over it on the way out of the all-night coffee shop, coffee sloshing out of his unscrewed thermos and onto his shirt. He hisses at the burn, but it dissipates. He'll survive. Thanks for that, he says, because Eric is leaning over the steering wheel and smirking like Charles in pain is terribly amusing. And Charles can do this. He can. I'm driving. Eric shrugs, but he slides over to the passenger side of the bench seat without comment. Where are we going? He takes a deep breath. The people who have Raven want information on the, well, your murders at 22nd and Race, Charles says, because it's not entirely a lie, and pulls out into the street, lights blinking red and yellow at them. He looks over at Eric's tense form and swallows, squeezing the steering wheel so tightly it squeaks. It's fine if you don't want to. I'm coming, Eric states. You need me. Charles can't breathe. He needs to do something. Needs to run every light to push Eric into one of those tiny cages Charles knows for a fact he still has nightmares about. Needs to shove him out of the car and find Raven as fast as he can. Needs to... He needs to be calm. "Thank you," he says, and Eric doesn't say a word. The silence continues all the way to the building, where Charles pulls out his gun, just in case. "Are you armed?" he asks. "Of course I am," Eric says, eyes fixed on that ripped-apart red door. "With what?" Charles asks. "Knives." Charles considers prompting him for a bit more information than that, but he notices there's another car that has stopped not too far away, lights off even when it was moving. Eric hasn't noticed, of course. Charles is fairly certain he's only half registering anything that doesn't happen to be wooden and peeling. "Let's go then," Charles says. Eric is only a step behind him when they walk in, and Charles still can't tell whether or not he's noticed the other car. He thinks the driver's side door opens right when they open the one to the club, still well oiled and unlocked. Eric is at his most tense, but then Charles takes a moment to look at him, assessing, and hopefully not looking as guilty as he feels. Eric simply nods at him and steps inside ahead of him. This is where Charles's plan, or what little of one he had, stops. He has Eric here, but he knows there's no way to convince him to lock himself in a cage. Eric may trust him, but he's no fool, or at least no more a fool than anyone else who trusts a desperate man. Eric looks at him, expectant and trusting. "And he is a serial killer," Charles reminds himself. "And Shaw has his baby sister. All it takes to get her back home safe and sound is turning over a brutal criminal who doesn't feel the slightest bit of remorse for every murder he's committed, even if he's turning him over to the man who made him that way." The emergency lights are on in the club, red and glowing in the ceiling. And he can't do this. He's a good person. He is. And there's not a person in the world who would have an issue with him handing a wanted criminal over to the authorities. Except for how Sebastian Shaw is a twisted criminal himself. And Charles has no proof other than the things he and Eric have said. But it all comes down to the mayor. "Charles," Eric asks, frowning at him. Charles realizes he's been motionless for the past few minutes, simply staring at Eric. "They have Raven," he reminds himself. "And Charles has a gun. He could disable Eric and lock him in one of the large display cages. God, he could probably get Eric into one just by asking or leading him in himself. Charles could easily lock them both in." But Eric looks tense and uncomfortable and worried, a hand moving to the side of Charles's neck. "Are you all right?"
"No,"
Charles says, and it does sound broken this time. Charles isn't sure what he's denying. Everything, most likely. He watches Eric's eyes sharpen, and Charles finds himself thinking about how every other person he's ever met softens in moments like this. Everyone but Eric, who is a serial killer, who trusts him, who quite possibly loves him. Charles thought he was in love once, but Eric. He steps back, shaking his head. "I can't do this," he says, hands grabbing at his hair, feet shifting him across the floor in some frantic grapevine to get him away from Eric. "I can't do this. Oh, God, I'm sorry, Raven. I can't. But Charles knows he must. The look on Eric's face when he's face to face with the barrel of Charles's gun is as shocked and broken as Charles feels. "What?" he says, and Charles can't let him say anything, can't let that voice get to him. "I give them to you, and I get my sister back," Charles says, fully aware that he's shaking hard enough that his aim would be horrible, but Eric doesn't seem to have noticed. "And I have to take care of her. She's the only family..." "Do you really think they'll live up to their side of the deal, Charles?" Eric asks. And his body may look carved out of ice, but his words are hurt and hot and passionate. "You trust the people who have Raven." Charles swallows, but doesn't move. "I trust that I can't take that chance," he says, "because there's no point in lying." "You know a gun won't stop me," Eric says, voice dark. "I know," Charles says, and he laughs, fully aware he is going to break if this keeps up. "But the fact I'm Charles Xavier would stop you. Lucky me, I'm the one person you'd never hurt." He tightens his grip on the gun, but keeps his trigger finger as loose as possible. "I need you to get into a cage, Eric."
"Are you going to shoot me, Charles?" Eric asks scathingly.
"I hope I won't have to," Charles says, "because then you have a chance to kill whoever comes to collect you. You could get them before they get you."
"They'll torture me, and then they'll kill me, as I have killed them," Eric says. "You know that, Charles. Stop lying to yourself that I'll survive this."
"You have a better chance of surviving than Raven does," Charles says, and he knows he's convincing himself again. "I can't let them keep her, Eric. Not when I know what they do to captives." Eric looks at him for a long moment, completely unreadable. And then he turns to walk further into the club.
"What are you..." Charles begins.
"I'm helping, just like I said I would," Eric snaps.
"And no, 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 he can't do this to Charles. He can't be this self-sacrificing. Can't go this far just for Charles."
"I have a preferred cage, if you must know."
"No," Charles says,
and ignores the harsh, bitter laugh that earns him. He holsters his gun and hopes Eric can hear it.
He knows Eric can hear him following, because Charles feels like a stumbling drunk, mind hazed and exhausted and flooded with uncertainty.
"No, you're right. I don't even know if they'd live up to their side of the exchange."
"Charles, you're doing exactly what any sane person would do in your situation," Eric says.
"Except no sane person would ever be in this kind of situation, would they?"
"No, the old saying, noble Charles, is well and truly gone by now. Has been for quite some time."
"Stop," Charles says, but Eric doesn't obey him. He never does. Charles reaches forward, grabbing his elbow.
"Eric, please, I can't let you do this. I can't do this to you."
Eric reaches out and slams him against one of the display cages, face still and expressionless as he looks at Charles. "You already did, Charles," he says. "Now you're just having trouble following through." He leans forward, eyes cold. "You love your sister more than me, remember?"
And for some reason, he wonders about that for a moment. But no, he remembers his father putting a bundle of pink in his arms with a smile and introducing him to "your baby sister Raven. You have to take care of her now." Remembers deliberately taunting Kane into always attacking him instead of his helpless little sister, because he'd once been too slow, and he'd found her bruised and scared at the bottom of the stairs. And never again. It wouldn't happen again. Never again.
"You made your decision, Charles," Eric says. "Moral and upright to the last."
"But... there has to be something else we can do," he says. It's more of a whisper than anything else,
and he can feel Eric's breath on his cheek.
Please.
Of course there's something else. I could kill you and leave, Eric says. If you were dead, you wouldn't worry about Raven anymore. Or me. Or yourself. It's the easy way out for you. It might even be a mercy, since I have a feeling you'll never have a full night's sleep again.
Charles stares at him, mouth dropping open at the fact Eric is considering killing him. But then logic kicks in, logic and memory, and Charles's jaw clenches shut.
If you thought death was a mercy, Charles says, you wouldn't be a serial killer. You'd keep your victims alive and in pain for as long as possible.
Eric shakes his head, the movement tense and abrupt, and steps back.
Don't pretend to understand, Charles, because you obviously have no idea.
But I do, Charles says, and reaches forward, meeting Eric's eyes with his own as he keeps a tight grip on the killer's wrist, hopefully keeping him here.
I do, Eric, and that's why we're going to leave here and figure something else out.
He breathes. Or he tries to, at least, because the look Eric is giving him makes every part of him stutter to a halt.
I do love Raven more than anything or anyone else. That will never change. But God, somehow I still...
Eric pulls him forward. And suddenly, it's as if the world had decided it was done humouring Charles Xavier. Because as Eric leans down to meet him, something hot and sharp bites into his back, and Eric swallows his scream. He's falling then, Eric following him down, and his eyes never leaving Charles's, and he knows Eric didn't do this to him, because he looks broken and scared, which is so very, very wrong, because Eric isn't afraid of anything.
I'll be fine, he says, and thinks, distantly, that there may be a gun firing. Or two, he doesn't know. Eric's hands are red when he touches Charles's face. It doesn't even hurt anymore. Eric makes a desperate noise, and he looks away. And no, Charles needs to see him.
No, don't go, please.
I'm not going anywhere, I promise, Eric says, glancing between him and his body, which feels distant, and something in the distance. The grip he has on Charles's hand hurts. And then someone else is moving Charles. It takes him a moment to recognize her, and all he can think is, that agent lady. And you are not Eric.
Who is this guy? She snaps,
and Charles notices her other hand has a gun pointed at Eric. That's not good.
Witness, thing under my belt, Charles says, and he's lightheaded. But this is that agent lady, and she and Eric were never supposed to meet. He has to misdirect but not lie. He needs to be able to think more clearly.
Sure is the bad guy. Raven?
Don't worry about Raven, she says.
And Charles can probably do that.
We need to get him to a hospital, Eric says, and hands are on him.
Big, lovely red ones. So is Eric.
Hold on, Charles. Try to stay awake.
Of course, Charles says. And the world fades away.